Welcome to the Manhattan Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. UUs have no creed, no articles of faith, but the seven principles that you'll find on the back of your order of service do show our point of view. For me, myself, these principles are religious principles, but other Unitarians would say, no, these are human values. And that also characterizes Unitarian Universalists. We respect divergent views responsibly arrived at, and we love to discuss it. So, welcome, whoever you are, humanist, lover, artist, child, gay, parent, or plumber, welcome. Now we open our service by lighting the chalice, and as Susan lights it, let's read responsively number 420 in the back of the gray hymnal. I'll start. It's not responsive. so let's read it together. Number 420. Here we go. We are here to abet creation and to witness to it, to notice each other's beautiful face and complex nature, so that creation need not play to an empty house. So be it. Our hymn of the month is number one, May Nothing Evil Cross This Door. And I have to say, the words bug me a little bit. It sounds as though we are to be isolated and insulated from the world, from the outside world. But that's not the point. This place, this fellowship, is our sanctuary, a place where we are safe, each of us, and a place where we can gain the strength to live rightly in the world outside. So let's stand as you're able and sing number one, May Nothing Evil Cross This Door. And may ill fortune never pry about these windows. May the war and rain go by. By faith made strong, the rafters will withstand the battering of the storm. This touching our lips with holy wine, till every casual corner blends into a shrine. With laughter drown the raucous shout, and though these sheltering walls are thin, may they be strong to keep hate out and hold love in. So be it. My name is Larry Weaver. I'm the convener, and as is typical, I made a mistake. I forgot to call your attention to the announcements in the bulletin, and in particular, I would like to call your attention to the circle dinners. You can sign up for these after the service in the narthex just outside. And it's a wonderful way to get to know each other. So please note the circle dinners in particular, the vote, the reminder about voting, and the other announcements. So, One more comment I can't resist about that song. I do wish there were a verse in that song about healing evil once it is inside. When I crossed the door, I hope I didn't bring anything, any hate or evil, but I did bring some unattractive stuff. I brought some unconscious racial and gender bias. I brought some misplaced pride. I brought some complacency in the face of things that need doing. And I need some healing. And I get it here from you, sometimes from individuals, sometimes from the program, sometimes from the fact of you in the pews supporting the fellowship. Those of you, some of you who have a way with words, write a verse for number one about the healing of the not quite evil that does come through the door, okay? All right, it's time for the story for all ages. And if y'all will come up here, I've got a story about sanctuary. We just said that this place is our sanctuary. But oh my gosh, what we have here. All right. Now, in this story, you have a part to play also. The story is about rain coming down, not a real hard rain, but a rain. And, you know, rain often is accompanied by thunder and lightning. And so occasionally I will say boom to indicate a crash of thunder. And you should then give me a loud boom. So, practice. Boom. Boom. That's pretty good. Once again, boom. Boom. Yes. Okay. You're set for the story. So, once upon a time, there was a little girl walking down the street. Now, she was not a real little girl. I mean, she was 8 or 9 years old. She was going from school to meet her parents downtown to buy some shoes from a shoe store. She was not in a hurry, and it was a cloudy, gray day, the kind of day we say is an overcast day. And as she walked, raindrops started bing, 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 and she heard a boom of thunder.
Boom!
Yes! She raced across the street into a store, the nearest store, to keep dry. And once she got in the store, she looked around the shelves to see what was there. She wasn't going to buy anything, of course. She was just sheltering from the storm. But then the shopkeeper came out, a very old woman, the oldest woman that the little girl had ever seen. She had white hair, much like Einstein there, and wrinkly face. Did I have any wrinkles in people here? No wrinkles here yet. Okay. And the shopkeeper said, may I help you? The little girl was a little bit scared because she knew that in the store you're supposed to buy something, but she said, well, in fact, she didn't say. She was sort of tongue-tied, and the shopkeeper said, oh, are you just sheltering from the storm outside? The little girl nodded. And then the shopkeeper noticed the little girl was kind of hesitating, and she said, do you need to go on? And the little girl said, yes, I'm supposed to meet my parents at a shoe store. Well, the old lady said, here is something you can use. And she pulled out an umbrella. Okay. Well, the little girl said, but I don't have any money to pay you for the umbrella. No worries. No worries, said the shopkeeper. Just take the umbrella and give it to somebody else who needs it. I don't know why it's raining, but I do know that you can have sanctuary under this, you can stay dry under this sanctuary you can carry. And so the little girl took the umbrella, opened it up, went outside, and as the rain came down, sure enough, she was dry. She walked along rather happily, and then she saw a man running down the street with newspapers over his head because he was clearly getting wet. And the little girl ran over to him and held up the umbrella and said, here, we can share. Wow. The man was so happy about that because he was on his way to the first day of a job, and here he was in a nice suit, but it was getting wet and rainy, and he was going to get to work looking miserable. Now, he had a little sanctuary. He was really happy. They walked together down the street, and the rain kept coming down, and the thunder boomed. In fact, it boomed again. And the little girl about that time saw the shoe store and said, there are my parents. You can keep the umbrella. But it's your umbrella, said the man. That's okay, said the little girl. Take it. Just give it to somebody else who needs it. I don't know why it's raining, but this will keep you safe in your sanctuary that you can carry, umbrella. Rainbows are related to storms and such, right? Okay. Well, the man went to the interview, or went to his first day of job on the job, did well, made a good impression. He was eventually able to buy an umbrella, in fact, several umbrellas, and he had the practice of whenever he saw somebody who needed an umbrella, he'd give them one and say, just take this. Just be sure to pass it on to somebody else who needs it. I don't know why it's raining, but you can have shelter with this sanctuary you can carry. And so it was that the town, pretty soon everybody in the town had umbrellas. And they had this saying, I don't know why it's raining, but you can be dry under this sanctuary you can carry. So umbrellas are a sanctuary. But I want to talk to you about another kind of sanctuary too. Maybe you remember the first day you were at a summer camp, or the first day of ninth grade, or the first day... Boy, I remember the first day of ninth grade. I was scared. I was unsure. I needed to feel safe. And then I saw a friend. And everything was better. The friend was my sanctuary. Now, do you read the comics in the newspapers? I do. I read it even before I read the sports pages. And my favorite, or one of my favorites, is called Zits. It's about several teenagers and their friends. And this comic strip had a strip about an episode about sanctuary last week, and here it was. You know how a comic strip is. There are several pictures. In the first picture, three boys are standing, have just gone through the lunch line, and they're carrying a tray, you know, of their food, and they're looking for a place to sit down. One of them says, "Hey, over there, there's a place." And the second picture, another one says, "Ah, Andy's sitting there. He's weird. Nobody likes him." In the third picture, the three boys are all looking at each other, obviously thinking. And in the fourth picture, they're standing by Andy's table. And they say, "Hey, may we join you? What's up with you?" They were offering sanctuary for Andy. And this is something that you can do. It's part of our second Unitarian Universalist principle, being kind in all you do, by being friendly. Just being friendly and saying hi, you offer a little bit of sanctuary to other people. And so may you go and do well, and remember to be kind in all you do. Speak to folks. Offer sanctuary. So, time for RE.
Hearts go with you. Learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all you do.
There are small pieces of paper in the row where you're sitting. These are papers on which you can write any joy or concern that you have. John Alou will collect them while the offering plate is being passed. And thinking of the offertory, remember that we support the work of this fellowship with our participation, with our work, and with our money. So let there be an offering given to sustain and strengthen this fellowship, which is sacred to many of us, that it may continue to be a community of sanctuary and hope, for we are now the keepers of the flame.
Matthew. I think that most of us entered this sanctuary this morning aware that people yesterday entered a sanctuary in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh for very similar purpose, to gather in community, to celebrate. And the result was devastating. So we certainly hold them in our hearts. One person writes, "My college roommate, graduate school best friend, and best man at our wedding are Jewish. I can't imagine how they feel after yesterday." And Les Lotchke, too, wrote that he's concerned about the events yesterday at the synagogue massacre. It's hard to hold it all in our hands and our hearts, because our lives go on at the same time. But we do have other personal sources of sadness and joy that come to us. So Josiah Lott is sad that he can't see Joey because he loves him. And Marissa and Jake Larson have adopted a kitten named Leia yesterday. She's adjusting well, and the new cat, and the cat Oreo is slowly getting used to her new sister, his new sister. We bring all of our joys and concerns to our sanctuary, to our home, to our connections with one another. We bring them all here, sanctuary. Let us turn inward now. Feel the rhythm of the breath. In and out. In and out. Find the peace of just being there with the flow of the breath. Letting go of yesterday and tomorrow. Feel the restorative peace, power of the peace of this moment. A peace large enough to open to the concerns and sorrows that trouble us. A stillness quiet enough to respond to the joys and celebrations that enliven us. There is safety here in the rhythm of the breath, the ebb and flow of life is enacted with each breath, taking in oxygen sustenance, letting go of carbon dioxide waste, taking in the fullness of experience, letting go of the residue that wants to cling to us. Cultivate inner peace and inner safety in this sanctuary, dedicated to cultivating the spirit of life, dedicating to being a beacon of love for all beings. The words of our anthem this morning, Shalom Havarim, are words of peace. Shalom means peace. Peace until we meet again, my friends. We dedicate our anthem this morning to the people of the Tree of Life Synagogue in the Squirrel Hill neighborhood of Pittsburgh, and to all those who hurt in sympathy, particularly our Jewish neighbors and friends.
As we consider sanctuary today, the following selection of Arab wisdom seems useful to me. It's from the Red Brocade by Naomi Shihab Nye. The Arabs used to say, when a stranger appears at your door, you feed him for 3 days before asking who he is or where he's come from. That way, he'll have strength enough to answer, or by then you'll be such good friends you don't care. In that spirit, let's rise and sing number 307, A Human Touch Can Light the Flame. This reminds us that sanctuary, granting sanctuary, our granting sanctuary, can be as simple as a human touch.
In human touch, love's faith we show. We show, we demonstrate our faith, our love in our human touch. The abstract theological constructs of faith and love and sanctuary are worthless without the human touch. Perhaps only people can deliver the goods, keep one another safe, envelop one another in the embrace of love, prove trustworthy and faithful. Sure, space is part of it, holy space, safe space. That's the most basic element of sanctuary, a place safe enough to retreat to when we need it. Though when our safest, most sacred places, like the Tree of Life Synagogue, are being violated, perhaps we need to redefine sanctuary. What we believe to be sanctuary may not be. In Carrie Newcomer's lovely song, Sanctuary, that we heard, there was a reference to Brown Chapel. Anyone know Brown Chapel? Do you know Brown Chapel? Brown Chapel is an AME church, an African Methodist Episcopal Church, and a National Historic Landmark in Selma, Alabama. Brown Chapel was the starting point for the 1965 march from Selma to Montgomery, the place where people, black and white, Jewish and Gentile, gathered to set out to march for voting rights. Brown Chapel served as sanctuary. When the marchers, trying to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge, retreated, beaten, bloodied, defeated for the moment, Brown Chapel was a place of sanctuary, and from that place, people could move back out into the world to march on, to return to the brutal, dangerous world, to carry on. To carry on. I didn't quite expect that reference in Newcomer's song that begs for human embrace and comfort. It's striking, though, the need for sanctuary in her song relates directly to the need for strength to carry on. It's not about retreat and holding up, isolating ourselves from the world. Rather, it's about preparing ourselves to move back into the world. In that sense, there could be no better example than Brown Chapel. I think, though, too, of the St. Paul Memorial Church in Charlottesville, Virginia. As avowed white supremacists invaded that town, interfaith leaders and followers, more than 600 of them, gathered in the St. Paul Chapel to hold a worship service, sacred space, sanctuary. And then they were alerted that chanting, torch-wielding protesters were moving in their direction. And based on what I have heard from people who were there, they were afraid. There, in that sanctuary, they did not feel safe any longer. Our safety is often an illusion, a sign of nothing more than familiarity. We think that cars are safer than airplanes only because we are in them so often. The truth is, they are much more dangerous. We think our homes are safe because they are familiar. We think our sanctuaries are safe because we have been safe there. We only know the truth when we leave the sanctuary, because the purpose of the sanctuary is never to stay there indefinitely. And that's important. We do not stay in sanctuary. We go to sanctuary when we need to recoup and then branch out from there, return to the world, and return to the work of the world. Staying in sanctuary too long makes it a bubble, a protected place that keeps us from realizing the work that's needed in the world, a place sometimes of illusion. The Reverend Rebecca Parker tells a story of a cross-country road trip with a friend. Following back roads, they came to an area with blinking yellow lights. The fields on the side of the road were covered with water. And here's her story. "Looks like they've had a flood here," we said. Coming into town, we crossed a bridge over a wide river. The water was high, muddy, flowing fast. Sandbags lined the roadway. "Gosh," we said, "they must have had quite a bit of high water to contend with here. Looks like it was a major flood." We headed out of town, following a winding country road, captivated by the evidence all around us that there had been a dramatic flood. Then we rounded a bend, and in front of us was a sheet of water covering the roadway. The water was rising fast, like a huge silver balloon being inflated before our eyes. We'd started to turn the car around. The water was rising behind us as well. Suddenly, we realized the flood hadn't happened yesterday or last week. It was happening here and now. Dry ground was disappearing fast. We hurriedly clambered out of the car and scrambled to higher ground. Soaked to the bone, we huddled under a fir tree. The cold water of the storm poured down on us, baptizing us into the present, a present from which we had been insulated by both our car and our misjudgments about the country we were traveling through. Rebecca Parker and her friend had the safety of the car protecting them, as well as the safety of their beliefs and guesses about what was happening, until they had to leave it, the sanctuary of that car, because it was no longer safe for them. It no longer could protect them. In her book, Blessing the World, What Can Save Us Now?, she compares her feeling in that situation to the circumstance of being white in America. seeing signs as we move through life safely, but not recognizing the import of those signs, not realizing what's happening right now. And if we're not careful, we can misuse sanctuary in this way. Our congregations can become oases of like-minded friends supporting one another, but closed off from the challenges and perils of the time we live in. This can be particularly true if we are concerned only for our own comfort and safety without consideration for that of others. Retreating into worlds of private schools or homeschools, gated communities, or objectivist philosophy may create some good for an individual or a family, but at a deep societal cost. As Rich Benjamin, author of Searching for Whitetopia, wrote in the New York Times, gated communities churn a vicious cycle by attracting like-minded residents who seek shelter from outsiders and whose physical seclusion then worsens paranoid groupthink against outsiders. Like the medieval castle or the fort on the American plains, gated communities or other like-minded enclaves provide the promise of sanctuary, safety from crime and from the incursion of the other. But sanctuary is no place to live indefinitely. The UN Habitat Report on world cities, not just U.S. cities, declares that significant impacts of gating, they're talking about gated communities, are seen in the real and potential fragmentation of cities, leading to the diminished use and availability of public space and increased socioeconomic polarization. In this context, gating has been characterized as having counterintuitive impacts, even increasing crime and the fear of crime as the middle classes abandon public streets to the vulnerable poor, to street children and families, and to the offenders who prey on them. Such results also tend to broaden gaps between classes, in so much as wealthier citizens living in relatively homogeneous urban enclaves protected by private security forces have less need or opportunity to interact with their poorer counterparts. That's from the UN Habitat Report. And this is the reason that schools in poor places and schools with majorities of children of color become worse, while white-dominated schools in more prosperous places become better. We leave some people behind when we seek to stay in a safer, better, more comfortable place. And the impulse is strong to pull away from the unfamiliar, what might be threatening. I know about this personally. When schools finally fully integrated in Prince William County, Virginia in 1966, I was sent to a private school. Fortunately, I did go back to the public schools for high school, and that made all the difference for me in my awareness of what was happening in the world. And we need that awareness. That's why sanctuary should always be temporary. Temporary retreat to a place of sanctuary is fine, even essential to our mental and physical health. Staying there as if it were the real world, the whole world, creates an illusion and allows us to continue deceiving ourselves, just as Rebecca Parker and her friend did. So, the point of retreating to sanctuary is for a respite, not for residency. Sanctuary is a hostel with restrictions on how long you can stay. So during this month, as we've examined sanctuary, we've widened our circle as we've moved. We began with an understanding of sanctuary as sacred and safe space, recognizing that even safe space may not always be comfortable. Then Reverend Sarah from Topeka reminded us of the need to include children in our sanctuary, keeping them safe, all of them. And then last week we invited in the animals, extending blessing and safety to them. And this morning I want to challenge us to internalized sanctuary so that we can take it out into the world and become sanctuary for others. The truth is that we can never be certain in the world we live in today that we are safe. We were reminded of that yesterday. We cannot be sure that we are safe. Writer and editor Maggie Smith produced a poem that Public Radio International called the official poem of 2016. It's 2018 now, but I think it still holds. It's called Good Bones, and there is one word in it that I will alter. You'll know it when you hear it. Maggie Smith's Good Bones. Life is short, though I keep this from my children. Life is short, and I've shortened mine in 1,000 delicious, ill-advised ways. 1,000 deliciously ill-advised ways I'll keep from my children. The world is at least 50% terrible, and that's a conservative estimate, though I keep this from my children. For every bird, there is a stone thrown at a bird. For every loved child, a child broken, bagged, sunk in a lake. Life is short, and the world is at least half terrible, and for every kind stranger, there is one who would break you. Though I keep this from my children, I am trying to sell them the world. Any decent realtor walking you through a real asshole chirps on about good bones. This place could be beautiful, right? You could make this place beautiful. So we need sanctuary to give us a model of making this place beautiful. Not to stay in, but to prepare us for the rest of the world, for making the whole world beautiful. So what do we do in a sanctuary to prepare ourselves to be out in the world? Healing. Larry mentioned it earlier. Healing. Sanctuary is the place we come to heal the wounds that the world has given us. We hold one another tenderly and honor the ways we've been hurt in the world. Whether it's the unavoidable human hurts of sickness and mortality, or the injustices of racism and patriarchy and heterosexism. I know much how much it meant to me to be in the sanctuary of feminist consciousness-raising groups back in the 80s. I learned not only that my wounds were real and that they deserved mourning and healing, but also that others suffered the same and similar wounds, that we were talking about systems of oppression, not personal, isolated, individual hurts. That we could bond together to make this place more beautiful, even as we admitted how ugly the ugly parts were. So I think we also turn to sanctuary for education. Consciousness raising healed, and it taught us something about ourselves and our society. That brought healing, yes, but it also offered us education. The kind of learning is another important function to pay attention to in sanctuary. I'm not talking about an academic grounding, though that might be part of it, so much as a life learning, a learning about meaning and connection, learning about ourselves and about how to be together. Also learning about the situations outside of us that we wish to address. Learning how to make the world more beautiful. Some of that learning needs to be conducted in the larger world where we can actually observe and participate. Some, though, is better taking place in sanctuary. And finally, planning and training ourselves for being in the action. When we were involved in the Poor People's Campaign earlier this year, how many people came to one of those actions in Topeka? Yeah. Each week, we gathered in a private meeting immediately before the action to discuss what was going to happen and prepare ourselves for it. Leaders and their roles were introduced. Some people even volunteered for leadership during those meetings. We reviewed the rules we were operating under and sometimes role-played civil disobedience. We raised our spirits with energy, with song, and learned songs we'd be singing later. And these meetings were not quite secret. Anyone on the PPC email list knew about them. They were a kind of sanctuary, though. We didn't take pictures. We didn't use social media so that the news of where we were going and what we were going to do did not seep out. And the content of the action was never announced beyond the smallest group of organizers until that meeting. So, sanctuary isn't a time for getting comfortable. It's a time of preparation for returning to work in the world, healing, education, planning, and preparation. The world feels so brutal right now. At the same time, I know it is beautiful. We can make it beautiful. I know it has good bones, as Maggie Smith writes. And I know we can't count on any particular place being safe. So here's what I propose. What if we make sanctuary portable? What if we take the qualities of sanctuary out into the world with us and extend them as far and wide as we can, like the umbrellas that Larry told us about in the story this morning? What might that look like? Bringing healing, education, planning, and preparation to others, giving it away, sharing it. And don't hold on to that umbrella longer than you need it. Pass it on. Pass it on. As we meet this morning, a group of Central American migrants is heading toward the U.S. for sanctuary. At the same time, 800 soldiers are headed toward the border to... Well, I'm not really sure if anyone knows exactly what they're supposed to do. They're not supposed to provide law enforcement. That's illegal under the Posse Comitatus law. And after the 1997 incident where a Marine shot a young goat herd near the border, the military itself declared that they weren't adequately trained for an armed operation where they were encountering civilians. Take that in just a minute. They weren't adequately trained for an armed operation where they're encountering civilians. They're supposed to be there for support, whatever that is. We already have 2,100 National Guard there in such a vague support capacity. And this is the exact opposite of the hospitality that Naomi Shihab Nye described in the poem Larry read earlier. I don't know exactly how we intervene in this situation. What I know is that sending the military to the border feels a lot like retreating to gated community, a move that does not make us safer and instead separates us from one another. Mexico, on the other hand, is offering temporary work permits, medical care, schooling, and housing to the migrants. Some Mexican towns have offered food, tarps, campsites. Feed a stranger for 3 days. Snip fresh mint or sprigs of rosemary. Offer an umbrella. That is being sanctuary, bringing sanctuary into our world. How will we bring sanctuary into the world? How will you bring sanctuary into the world? We have a few minutes, and I'd love to hear people's ideas of how they might bring sanctuary into our world.
This isn't an idea, but I kind of have this sense of frustration because, you know, there's this idea that you want to throw open your gates, but if you're in a larger gated community, like we're talking about on a national level, then, you know, you're kind of feel powerless to open those gates. So yeah. It's just a sense of being very small.
That's a real feeling we're sitting with.
Susan, Adam Chack. I'd like to just give a little example that I just experienced yesterday of the sanctuary of touch. Many of you have offered me sanctuary in the last several weeks. You know, my husband's quite ill. Yesterday, when I was leaving Stony Brook to return home after he had once again refused to eat, I was feeling pretty miserable. And as I walked down the hall, there's a woman there who has dementia and is usually seen holding a little baby doll, walking herself down the hall in a wheelchair. And last night, she gestured me over. It was the first time we had made eye contact. And she took my hand and she kissed it. And that was such a moment of grace for me that something in her reached out and that she in her own world was able to do that. It was wonderful.
We all have capacity to give sanctuary. Beautiful example.
Michael Oldfather, this weekend I have been trading emails with Marshall and Bailey Gordon. They are Jewish. They live in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. They have always lived in Pittsburgh or close by. their home is across town from Squirrel Hill. And at this point, they do not know whether any of the people who died are among them. There are many friends there. But I called there. I emailed them because Marshall and Bailey and we share two grandchildren. So we take this hard.
Excuse me, Larry Weaver. One of the ways that we here in this fellowship extend sanctuary out into the community is through Happy Kitchen, where potentially homeless people get a breakfast. One of the things that I have experienced there is, a particular example. One of the folks who comes talks out loud. She thinks out loud. And she told me that. She said, I just think out loud. So she walks around the room thinking out loud. This is a kind of uncomfortable situation for a lot of people. But another of the homeless folk sat down at the table with her and talked with her through the whole meal. That guy provided sanctuary, an example of sanctuary that comfortable Larry here could learn from. And I sort of did. A couple of days later, I was out for a morning jog right in my neighborhood, and it was early in the morning, foggy. I don't see that well, and so I saw a person with a knapsack walking down the street, and homeless folk with knapsacks often walk along Anderson. This was about a block or so off. And I thought, oh, my gosh, they're homeless. There might be
casing the joint for it. And then I stopped. I said, wait a minute. If someone's homeless, they need help. I mean, this is something I learned here, people. This is the repair that the congregation can do for people, for me. And I resolved to go down and say, can I help you? As I jogged down toward the person. Well, it wasn't a homeless person. It was a college student who was working in the foundation building with a knapsack that contained her lunch and her papers that she needed. And she wasn't casing the joint. She was admiring a breathtakingly beautiful maple tree. So, a day in the life.
Maybe John or Lou can amplify or elaborate on this idea that occurred to me, which is probably not an original idea at all, but in thinking about this caravan that's coming, and then all of the National Guard and the military and all that that are going to meet them, it made me just wonder what happened to, you know, the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island, and bring us your, yeah. So, and then I thought, well, why are so many people coming in illegally? Probably because we won't allow them in legally. And if we allowed more people in legally, of course they would come legally. So maybe our problem is that we're making it too hard. Unlike our tradition that is sort of symbolized by the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island. And maybe we need to be letting that idea be heard as a counterweight to what our president is using the caravan as a rallying cry to keep people out.
I want to close here with some words from Reverend Earl Holt. The moment of prayer is an invitation to be calm in the midst of the tumult of the world, to bring together thought and feeling, mind and spirit, and to find some center, some still point of perspective and peace. Here in this sanctuary, which has been the home for so many secret thoughts and hopes, fears and desires, may we feel free to look at ourselves with true honesty. May we be unafraid to face the decisions we've been trying to avoid, the doubts and questions it's been easier to ignore, the things we have tried to keep hidden, not only from others, but even from ourselves. May we come to discover that there are resources within ourselves and beyond us that are as hidden but as real as our secret doubts and fears. New dimensions of the spirit within and without will be revealed to us as we confront ourselves honestly and come to understand that we are not isolated from the community of life and spirit, but that our soul's suffering connects us with the hidden suffering of others. May we come to see that in our deepest loneliness, we are not alone. And may we be emboldened by this vision to reach out to others in their need. And so finally to discover that to give is not only more blessed than to receive, but that to give to others is to receive what we most need for ourselves. Our closing hymn is number 335, Once When My Heart Was Passion Free. Rise in body or spirit.
Once when my heart was passion free.
way we come to see that in our deepest loneliness, we are not alone. And may we be emboldened by this vision to reach out to others in their need, and so finally to discover that to give is not only more blessed than to receive, but to give to others is to receive what we most need for ourselves. Amen.